Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Car Stuff, a production of iHeartRadio. Hello and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm your host, Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bullen.
And I am Kurt Guerin.
Hey guys, you know what? Today, let's do something just a little bit different than what we normally do. I know we like to, you know, dig into, a make or model or, something like that. Or We talk about the history of a person. But today, I would like to kind of talk about our garages, if that's okay with you.
Oh, this is interesting to me, Scott, because you know, my friend, that I like 17% of the U.S. population currently live in an apartment where I do not have a garage, but I have some plans. Yeah, I'd love to talk about this because you know what? I miss my garage. Living in a house, the best thing about it was that space.
Yeah. It can be a nice place to go sometimes. I mean, it can actually be kind of relaxing. It can be calming, and it could be the other as well. It can also be infuriating. And I had a garage for a while that was infuriating to me. It made me just kind of tense to be out there. And it was because it was so crowded. It was like the lighting was terrible. It was not a great place to be. It was cold in the winter. It was hot in the summer. I still got a couple of these issues going on, don't get me wrong.
Uh-huh.
But I've done some things recently that I think were really, some fantastic improvements and cheap, things that I could just do simply that helped out a lot. And I think if, anybody out there has got a similar situation where, it's not the most comfortable place in the world to be out there in the garage, but if you have something like that going on, there are some things that you can do to make it a better place for you and make you want to go out there and make you want to take on those projects, that you might not have done in the past. So, I don't know, I just find it very therapeutic to go out there now and just kind of, spend a little time sorting, organizing, straightening, working on some things, whatever it happens to be. It's a nice place to be now. And again, I've got some things that I still need to do, and we can talk about what I haven't done yet versus what I have done. But there's a lot of really simple things that just about anybody can do with either zero money, which is, the best price, or, you could find real bargains, I guess, bargain ways to do this. So what we're not doing today is we're not talking about, these million-dollar upgraded garages that we've all seen on, online. Of course, you do a keyword search for, expensive garage options or, whatever. You're going to find people that have elevators to a second level in their garage, and they're going to have, they're going to have priceless works of art hanging on the wall, with, art gallery lighting all around it.
Ooh, I think I know where you're at. Another example would be those really cool parking spots that recess into the ground.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. And we're not talking about those today.
I know, I just want to say they're cool.
Oh, yeah, they are. They're really cool. Those are really cool. And I think we've done another episode on some outlandish garages
that have
that type of thing. So what I'd like to do is maybe talk about making your garage a functional place versus, having kind of like a show garage, I guess, where, you have friends over and you've got a couch out there and stuff like that, and a big screen TV on the wall. We're not talking about stuff like that. We want to make it something that, you're comfortable to go out there and work on your projects or whatever. You can even take other stuff from the house and work out there on your workbench, and you've got space to do it.
A workspace, yeah.
A comfortable workspace.
Yeah, I propose that we start at the beginning when most people move into a house. You know, you'll find several areas of the house that tend to be a little rough around the edges, or they tend to be unfinished. You know, sometimes in the suburbs, these are called like bonus rooms, right? Or you'll have an unfinished attic. You'll have a basement that still has a dirt floor, things like that.
Yeah.
The garage is often one of those spaces. The garage is the most likely to just be a room, and who knows what condition the door is in,
yeah,
right? So for a lot of people, when they move in, if they're going to start building their garage from the ground up, they look at two huge things, the door and the floor. These can get expensive, right? But there are some very reasonable things you can do, even a little bit kind of DIY style, to give your garage some insulation, because that's one of the things that stuck out to me when you were talking about this in the beginning. You said sometimes the garage is too hot, too cold. It's weird because I've seen more kind of cluttered, stuffy garages than I have operational ones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, Kurt and I were talking about this earlier, off air, of course. We were talking about how seems like a lot of garages don't really get a car parked in them ever. I mean, a lot of people right. just simply use it for storage. I mean, or there is a car under there somewhere, you know, that at one time was a project, or at one time was driving, or, you know, whatever, it's grandma's car or whatever, and you parked it here and you left it there and you just started piling stuff on top of it and it became
the most expensive shelf
well,
you own.
It became a storage area, right? Instead of a car storage area, it's a stuff storage area. It's like an extension of your basement or your attic or whatever.
It's where all the things that you didn't like enough to have in your house, but you couldn't throw away, end up. You know,
that's exactly right.
The limbo. It's the holding area.
Stuff that was in your yard that you know you want to bring in from the weather, or lawnmowers, or at least these days, more and more garages seem to be just like a catch-all of storage.
Yeah,
exactly right. I have a point I want to make about that real quick. It's a larger philosophical point, and it doesn't have a huge role to play in today's episode. But I think a big reason that a lot of that clutter begins to accrete is it's twofold. First, many of us, unfortunately, when we are doing a task at home, whether it's auto repair, whether it's yard work or something like that, we tend to think of the task just as us accomplishing the thing. So you're tilling the yard, right? Or you're changing the oil. Then once you screw that oil filter back on, and once you put the new oil in the system, then a lot of us tend to think, well, the job is pretty much done. Let me just, you know, seal up the container I have for the old oil. Let me just put it somewhere because I'm quote unquote done. So I'm going to take care of all this stuff later.
Yeah.
And then that's how we end up just throwing stuff willy-nilly into a garage. And then once you have a small pile of crap somewhere, it becomes so much easier to make more small piles of crap.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? That's exactly what happens. And, you know, one of the tips, I guess, that I've kind of picked up along the way here is that, you know, it's great to organize your garage. Sure. I mean, I think we can all agree that, you know, a well-organized garage is it's any room actually is better off when it's well organized, right? It really
True.
Is.
Yeah.
But I have recently reorganized my garage and kind of figured out where everything goes and got things kind of, you know, clustered together where they should be, the chemicals in one area, you know, the electrical stuff in one box over here. You know, I know where everything is. And I can easily lay my hands on everything. The problem is that if you don't do that about twice a year, you're going to fall behind. And it's the truth. I mean, it's just what you said, like where, you know, you start gathering more things and putting things in front of other things, and it blocks your view. It blocks your access to those items. And, you know, things get a little dirtier because you don't pick it up to, you know, clean underneath it or whatever. And, you know,
right.
It's just snowballs. The whole problem starts to snowball. But you have to, if you do maintain a garage that is well organized, I mean, I really do feel like it's just an easier place to go and access whatever you need because you know right where it is. I mean, it's been so helpful to me to be able to do this recently that I had some time that I was able to straighten everything up, and I can just go in there right now and I could access anything that I need. I know exactly where it is. And that's so helpful because before it was kind of scattered all over the place. It might be in the basement. It might be, you know, out back on the porch. It might, you know, who knows where it would be, right? So now I can go in there and I feel like I can put my hands on anything that I need to right away. And it's very, very helpful. So, you know, I think I derailed you here on the insulation.
Oh,
we were talking about insulation, right?
Yeah, this is a very easy DIY project.
This is for the giant door, right?
Right, right. This is for the giant door. First off, make sure the door works.
Yeah.
You know, there's just nothing sadder than driving by a house and you see the busted garage door because it's one of those things that people don't really want to fix because it can be a pain.
Yeah.
Right?
I think the garage door is the largest movable object in your house, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think it is. Yeah, it weighs a ton, right? I mean, it's mm-hmm. and it's all resting on that one little motor that's up there in the center of the ceiling.
Yeah.
So that thing gets a lot of work.
It really does. Yeah. So garage door manufacturers have found that if you insulate your garage door, it's going to be about 12 degrees warmer Fahrenheit. It's nothing crazy in the winter months and about 25 degrees cooler in summer.
Ah, cooler. I could use cooler out there.
Yeah, yeah, because we're in Georgia.
Yeah.
So one thing that's neat about this is that unlike installing a garage door, it's pretty easy to insulate a garage door on your own by yourself.
Oh, it's very easy, actually. And they make kits even for this if you want to buy a kit or you could just simply do it yourself, right? I mean, there's like three types of insulation that you can buy. You can either do the bat type, which is kind of like I guess this is the stuff that you see on new built homes, you know, like the stuff they roll out in between the walls. It's flexible. It's, you know, they got the paper backing. It's the least expensive option out of these. And these are all very low dollar things too. There's also foam board that you can buy that's cut for the panels specifically, or you can cut it yourself, custom cut it. There's also reflective.
Is that the yellow foam with the reflective film over it?
Yeah, it's like silver looking almost.
Yeah.
And to me, that would be crazy distracting in the garage, you know, to have something that's like reflective like that.
Especially if you have a work light on and it's bouncing off the work light.
Yeah, I mean, but hey, maybe that works, right? Maybe that's good.
Yeah,
you know, maybe it's a benefit to have a reflective garage door on the inside. But either way, I mean, like you said, Ben, I had no idea that the temperature swing could be so great just by insulating the door. I mean, it makes sense. It's just a piece of metal that is between you and outside.
And it doesn't count the windows. It doesn't count any other insulation. Just doing that to the door will end up saving you money.
Yeah. It will. I mean, but it just makes it, again, like everything else that we're going to talk about today, I hope, it will just make it more pleasant to be out there, a little bit more pleasant. In my own garage, I haven't done insulation yet. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I haven't done. I haven't changed the lighting or anything like that yet. I haven't done anything really big yet. But these are all low-dollar things that we can talk about, you know, the ones that I'm still missing. But I will say this, that, you know, when I'm out there in the summertime, I bring a small fan, just like a box fan.
Sure.
It helps out tremendously just to have something like that in the space. And that's one thing that I think everybody can do that just to make it easier on yourself out there. Just it's a simple, simple thing. Bring
go
a box
get,
fan out
get
there.
Get a little $20 box fan.
Yeah.
From your local department
store.
Yeah,
go crazy. Get a $25 box fan.
Whoa,
yeah, or
whoa.
Find one at a thrift shop or, you know, whatever. You can get it for $3. I don't care. But that's one thing that you can do. And then I've got also, this is also effective, and it's a two-car garage, so it's a bigger space. Just a tiny little ceramic heater. It's very, very small. Like, I'm holding my hands out like everybody can see this, but it's only like about, you know, 8 or 12 inches across, and you know, it's like a little cube. Right?
Yeah.
But it's a ceramic heater, and the thing really cranks out the heat. I mean, it's fantastic to use in the garage in the wintertime because you can put it right near you without the fear of having, you know, kind of like an open flame anywhere nearby or any kind of chemicals, like if you have a kerosene heater, something like that. So it's beneficial to have something like this on hand if you're in a colder climate. Just a really simple plug-in ceramic heater, and that makes your area so much better. It takes a little while to get it warmed up in there. You're not going to be blistering hot or anything like that,
right.
But it beats back the cold enough that you're able to work and you can keep your hands functioning because, you know, when it gets really, really cold and your hands don't seem to want to work the right way, that's what I felt like anyway. When it gets really, really cold, like you just can't get your fingers to do what you want them to do. You're so cold.
And you can't wear gloves because you need the dexterity.
Yeah, yeah. Either that or you'd wear those little thin mechanics gloves, and those aren't really meant for like warmth or anything.
No.
I mean, they sell insulated ones, but again, you've lost all tactile sense, you know, at
right.
that point. So sometimes you need that. But this is just two simple, really really inexpensive things that you can do that help out a lot out there.
I am going to say, though, again, and I totally agree with you on this one, Scott, but I must point out that before you buy any new thing for your garage, counting a car, clean your garage.
Oh, yeah.
Get rid of all the stuff you don't need, because for most people, if you look through it, you'll find things that you just don't need. You just put them somewhere and you forgot about them. A lot of people have a half-finished project, you know, and it can be tough to swallow your pride and be honest with yourself and say, well, you know, I guess I actually don't care as much about building this...
What, matchstick airplane?
Yeah, building this matchstick airplane.
Or whatever, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's just somehow, like, if you had a hobby or something and you've got, you know, all the stuff associated with that hobby, but you no longer do the hobby, then maybe it's time to get rid of it. You got old skis laying around, but, you know, like we're here in Georgia.
Yeah.
I mean, rarely would you use skis unless you, you know, travel with them, obviously. But things like that, just use common sense. I got rid of a ton of stuff in my garage.
Oh, yeah?
You know what I finally got rid of that made me feel so good? It's like it just helps you feel better, lighter, to get rid of all this stuff.
I know. Uh-huh.
So do you remember many, many years ago, we tore apart that old MG?
Yes. Okay. Oh, boy. Yeah.
All right. That was a long, long time ago, right? And I think most of our listeners have seen photos of us in that thing, you know, kind of, you know, we were elbow deep in that thing for a long time, right?
Yeah,
crawling all over it.
It was great, though, to completely dismantle a car without worrying about putting it back together.
Yeah, that was so funny. Yeah, because like it broke. Okay, fine. You know, that's all right. All we were doing is trying to get to the parts so we could then describe the parts and see them and, you know, like, and do that kind of thing, right? The project ended up going nowhere, really. I mean,
it was a lot of fun.
We spent several days doing this. It was kind of a junk. It was a junk car.
And you ended up with a ton of parts.
I got bins and bins and bins of parts, you know, like pistons and rings and the crankshaft and the camshaft and, you know, all the stuff. I've got all these, like, heavy metal parts. I've got the head sitting in a bin. But all that stuff has been in my garage for years and years.
Almost a decade.
Almost, yeah. It's getting close. And I finally got rid of it. I just took it to, I tried to get it, you know, to somebody that had an MG and that didn't want it. No one wanted the parts. I don't know if they thought they were hot or what. No, that wasn't it. It's just, you know, it's very specific and you don't know the quality, you know, the condition of all the stuff.
Sure,
and
yeah.
It was remarkably well preserved, all that stuff, because it's all oily and, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's all clean and
it's usable. Yeah. Most of it's usable.
It's usable, but I could not get anybody to take that stuff, so I just finally had to scrap some of it. And, you know, a lot of it was beat up and old and bad anyway, so I didn't feel too bad about it. But, I mean, years and years of that stuff sitting around and just taking up space, again, it just feels so good to get rid of stuff like that. And I got rid of, you know, like a power washer. I got rid of, you know, a bunch of stuff that was just clutter that's not working anymore.
I have to ask, did you go to your neighborhood Russian landfill to get rid of those MG parts?
I did, and it's changed hands. Yeah, I don't know. Have we talked about this again recently on air? Not on air. Okay. Well, I went back. I went back again to this. I did go to that place. I'd made several trips, not for just the car parts, but for other stuff I had laying around, just, you know, scrap metal type things.
Uh-huh.
One thing was from the garage door. I had a great big greasy bar that was, you know, like the main bar that the track was on. You know, stuff like that. I just had a bunch of little things laying around. An old gas grill that, you know, it had kind of fallen apart. It was rusty. But I went there, and it was owned and operated by someone new now. It's not the Russian mafia or whoever was running this place before. Because I really had that strong feeling that that was what was going on there. I really did. And I know we talked about it.
Yeah.
But it's completely different now. So it wasn't quite a... It wasn't as much fun as it used to be.
That's what, you know, I'm thinking.
Yeah, it wasn't as exciting. Like, it wasn't as thrilling to go back, you know. But I don't know. Still good though. Oh, can I tell you one thing that I think maybe I talked to Kurt about this off air. But you see crazy things at a junkyard, right?
Yeah.
So I go there and I threw all of my junk, you know, including like an old water heater and a gas grill, like I said, all these engine parts and everything. I throw them on this pile that is like, it's the size of like a 4-story house. It's huge.
Jeez.
This giant junk pile, right? So I back up to it and I just kind of heave all the stuff over there. And after I had driven away and I got up to the, you know, the area where you get paid almost nothing for your parts, right? For the weight of your parts.
You get your pittance.
Yeah, I get my my check for $10 or whatever it was.
Whoa,
you know, $10.20, I think it was. And this is like hundreds of pounds of metal, right? So I look back, and I swear to you, it looked like I could hardly even see my pile of stuff there. That was, you know, it's taken up so much space in my garage, but on that pile, it looked like nothing. It looked like another grain of sand on the beach. It was like mm-hmm. that. It was amazing how small that pile of stuff was. And then I was thinking, okay, well, this has got kind of a rough edge to it. You know, like it kind of gets strung out over the lot. So a guy gets in this crane. It's almost like not a front loader, but it's like a crane, I guess.
Okay. Okay.
And it's got a grasping arm like a pincher.
Yeah.
And so they can pick up things and move them. So he goes over and kind of motors this thing over to the side, and he picks up this ball of iron that's like all twisted and tangled up. It looks like a Brillo pad, only it's like a Brillo pad like the size of like two minivans.
Weird.
It's that big, right? And he like puts that on the ground, and he starts like wildly swinging the arm left and right, and he's using this big mass of metal as like a broom, and he's like sweeping the stuff up onto the pile, and he would like drag it across and then give it kind of like a little uplift at the end, and it would like pick stuff up and kind of throw it on the top of the pile. But it was just bizarre. It's like they're getting to play with these massive toys like that. It looked like so much fun to be able to do that, and this way of doing it. I'm sure that other junkyards do the same thing.
Sure.
But
yeah.
I had never seen this before. And that tangle of metal was so, it looked so dangerous. So, you know, it looked like if you got near that thing, you would get cut.
Maybe, yeah, because I imagine it's moving at speed.
Oh, yeah. He's like, no, I mean, even, like, I didn't even want to approach it, like, when it was just sitting still. Like, I didn't want to even, because it looked like, just like a tangle of weeds almost, but it's metal. It's like jagged metal, you know?
And that probably makes it lighter to swing.
Yeah.
So how about this, man? How about the next time you drop some stuff off there, instead of taking a check, you ask if you can take a swing with the broom?
That's not a bad idea. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, oh, you can keep your $10, but let me drive that crane for just a few minutes.
Give me 15 minutes on the crane.
It looks like so much fun. I mean, it looks like it would be a blast. I'm sure it's just another task for them, you know, but...
Sure. That's a crazy thing.
Yeah.
How quickly the coolest stuff becomes normal.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, you're
like,
right.
I've been traveling a lot. I was recently in a plane flying over the Pacific last week, and I got irritated because I was trying to work on some stuff, and I thought, man, this Wi-Fi is being slow, and I had to pause for a second. I was like, hey, I'm flying like thousands and thousands of feet in the air at this crazy speed.
Yeah, you're going like 600 miles an hour.
Right. And I have the audacity to be like, oh no, this page is loading slow. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It is funny, isn't it? How you get like, so you get jaded, I guess, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know? And it's really remarkable that you're able to do it at all, really.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Before I wax too philosophic about how ungrateful I am as a person in general, I want to go back to the point you made about getting rid of stuff, because I know it can be tough for a lot of people to hear. And also, we're all familiar with Tetris.
Yeah.
And Tetris is such a useful game because it shows us the value of organizing space and putting things where they fit. For a lot of people listening today, the problem isn't that there's a bunch of stuff that they could get rid of and they just haven't. The problem is that there's stuff you have to keep and you have nowhere else to put it. So I want to say you don't have to throw everything in your garage away. Really, why not just invest in some organizational tools?
Yeah, and you know what? Online is a beautiful place to be able to do this, because you can go and to kind of lay out your plans or lay out your ideas, and it doesn't have to be expensive. I can tell you that. There are some ridiculously expensive cabinets and countertops and there's the opposite end of the spectrum for all this stuff. So you can get affordable cabinets. You can buy pre-made shelving, or you can make your own. You can, you know, DIY this thing. You know,
get so that, four like, cinder blocks and 2 2x4s.
Yeah, I mean, really, milk crates and you know, boards. That's all you need, really. I mean, honestly, that's all you really need. It's so simple. You can do a lot with what you have already, or you can just kind of make what you have work a little bit better for you. I mean, think about storage, like maybe storing things, you know, if your garage door goes up, but you've got, you know, like a 9-foot ceiling, you've probably got unused space above the garage door, you know, that won't interfere if
exactly.
you can store stuff up there. Like, you know, they have hanging racks. You can do that.
Yeah.
Or you can simply, I saw the coolest idea. You just make, it's almost like wooden I-beams almost.
I saw that, yeah.
And you can slide your bins onto those things and you can slide, you know, I guess you can put a stop on one end so they don't slide off, but you can access all that stuff really easily. I mean, you're not pulling down. You'd have to pull the whole bin down. But think about putting stuff up there like, I think the recommendation was like, you know, stuff you don't use very often, like seasonal things,
exactly.
camping gear, things like that, that, you know, you only need a few times a year or even once a year, but it's a great place to put it. I mean, if you don't have a basement or you don't have an attic storage or something like that, you know, that space above your door is valuable space that's being, you know, left unused. And a lot of people just kind of overlook that one.
Prime real estate. On this note, I want to show you guys something. This made me feel like a genius when I read that someone else had done this online. When I was a kid growing up, one of the dumbest parts of our garage was the corner where we just had to throw all like the rakes and the shovels
yeah.
and the picks and the hoes and stuff because we didn't have a super great place to put it. And we didn't have room to, you know, make a corkboard hanging wall. But we had this idea where we had some old pallets laying around and we put one up on its side and we did this. I'm showing Scott the picture.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Here. Do you want to describe that?
Yeah, it's just it's up against exposed studs on the wall, but it gives you a space. It like carves out a space there. If you put the pallet up against the wall vertically and nail it in place, screw it in place,
sure.
or whatever, it gives you a place to put those long handle tools that, you know, are oftentimes either just leaning against the wall or, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
I've made my own tool rack, not like that, but the kind with like just hooks that you can hang things on, you know, like you'd buy them for like maybe, you know, hanging a bike on the ceiling
sure.
or something like that.
Yeah.
They make all different shapes. And I got some that are shaped like almost like a Y that has a little bit of a lip to it. And I screwed a 2x4 to the wall and into the stud. So it's really, really solid. And I hung up my tools on that, you know, on these, I spaced everything out and, you know, measured it all out. So everything goes right where it should so that, you know, it doesn't interfere with the tool next to it. Doesn't knock it down every time you take it off. And then I did this cool thing where, I think this is cool anyways. I hung up just an eye hook and I put a carabiner through it with a little loop on the end. And then on every power tool that I have, like my leaf blower, it's an electric leaf blower, or a trimmer, you know, electric trimmer, I tied a corresponding loop on that object that stays on there all the time. It's just a little, maybe like a foot long piece of rope that I tied into a loop. And then all I have to do is just hook it on the carabiner and that hangs, then those hang down below in that void space in between the tools.
Nice.
So
smart.
Like it's all like sorry, I'm tooting my own horn here,
yeah,
but
yeah.
it's really, I feel like it's well laid out, and I tried to like use that idea or that way of dealing with things to organize the rest of the garage, and it's gone pretty well so far. I mean, I've been able to figure things out and place things accordingly so that, you know, it all fits, like you said, like Tetris, you know, it
yeah.
gives you I don't know. It just gives you a much more open feel to it, and it allows you again to access anything that you want right at, you know, a moment's notice, and you know right where everything is. And the good thing about something like that, a lot of people will, you know, they'll think like, well, big deal. You can buy an old bucket and throw your tools in it. That's fine, but
sure.
that takes up a lot of floor space.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So that's a smart way to do it, like you and your family have done or did in the past. I don't know if your dad still does that or what, but still using the old the pallet there against
the
wall.
Are you kidding, man? He's retired, so that means that the garage is getting this crazy, crazy mop down.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
He went through, gosh, I guess starting about a year and a half ago, he started getting rid of stuff, and I thought that was cool, but, you know, anybody who has had parents or family members start cleaning stuff out of the house, you know what happens. I was getting calls,
yeah.
like once or twice a week, just to pitch me on whether I wanted this ridiculous
uh-huh.
item.
And yeah.
He's like, you know, hey, I've got this tiller. You want a tiller? And I'm thinking, well, that's, I don't know where I'm going to put that in my
yeah.
two-bedroom apartment, but I appreciate it, man.
Well, the thing is, like, you hate to see stuff like that go, though,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like he doesn't need it anymore. But he doesn't want to just give the thing away.
And he's got two tillers. You don't need two.
Yeah. Well,
So he's trying to get rid of one.
See, that's what I did with like my gas grill. Okay, yeah. I had a gas grill that's laying around, but it's a pile of garbage. You know?
Right.
But I eventually just had to just get rid of it for the scrap metal. And no one wanted it. I mean, and no one. I probably wouldn't feel good giving it to somebody even. You know, it's just that in that poor of condition. And I had another one that had replaced it, so why not get rid of that one? It just makes sense. Like if you can just kind of pare things down a little bit in there. And give yourself some room, some elbow room, because now I've got it's a modest size work area. It's not very big at all. And sure. I've even got some things on there that I still want to get rid of, you know, some bench type things that I kind of want to get rid of and clear out the area. But it's so nice to have a functional space to work in again. And I really do appreciate that, you know, having that space to go to. And, sometimes after I'm done, working out in the yard or whatever, just kind of hang out in there. It's not a bad place. I put a stereo in.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you have tunes?
Yeah, and that's another thing. Like, this is so simple. You know what it cost me to put a stereo in my garage?
Mm-mm.
Like, less than $40 probably. And
really?
It's pretty cool. It's like a Kenwood sound system that I went and got. I got it at like a Goodwill or a thrift store,
sure,
or something like that.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
a great receiver. I was looking for one of the old dial-in types, with like the old, real old school silver front,
kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah. Couldn't find one. They were too expensive when I did. This one is a really nice system. I don't have the model number in front of me right now, but I was able to get some floor speakers, like those old floor speakers, the big ones.
Yeah.
Killer speakers. They're really, really cool. And they look cool.
Yeah.
And again, I think they're Kenwood. I think it's a matching set. I can't remember now. But I just put them on top of a shelf somewhere. I've got four of them. I only put up two, and that's more than enough. You only need one, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I barely turn the volume up on the thing, because in the garage, it's pretty...
It echoes.
It does. So, you just have it on soft, but it's nice, and it passes the time, and it's something that's so simple to do. It is so inexpensive to move, like, an old stereo out there or just something cheap.
Mm.
You can get them anywhere, really, for just a few bucks. It just makes it that much more pleasant to be out there for a longer period of time. Whether you're working on something, you just kind of tune everything out and get to work. It's nice.
Yeah, I think that's when you know you're going in the right direction. It's when you reach the point with the garage where you walk in and you think, yeah, I could just hang out here for a second.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's when you know that you've done something right. I do also want to add to that excellent point about using the ceiling as real estate. It's depending on the type of ceiling you have and the type of hooks you're able to get in there, it's a fantastic place to put ladders.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's another thing, is get all that stuff up off the floor if you can.
Yeah.
Because it just takes up space. It's just usable real estate that you're losing. If you have especially a ladder, big ladder, you have it kind of leaning against the wall, it takes up even more room if it has to stand out from the wall and lean against it. If you understand, the footprint of it becomes bigger because of that. I mean, if you can somehow get it up against the wall or even off the floor, all the better. Simple hooks. I mean, hooks have saved me so much space in my garage. It's unbelievable. And I don't even have like a big fancy wall system or anything like that. It's just an open shelving unit. And it's like very industrial looking. It's just very functional. But it's not like covered. I don't have everything like concealed or anything like that. In fact, I wish I did. I wish there was I know I could just put up like a piece of cloth over it or something, and that would conceal it if you wanted a cleaner look to it.
Oh, no, man. Go crazy. But, get like a Murphy bed type mechanism. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it folds down.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I'm probably going to build when I get a garage that is my own again. I'm going to build some fold down tables. They're super simple to build.
Yeah.
And they're great for space management. Because the last garage I had was from a house built in the 1960s, and the garage was just smaller than a lot of garages you'd see now. So,
yeah.
I had to do stuff like that.
It was very narrow, right?
Yeah, it was pretty narrow.
Yeah.
It's like, it was so, it was essentially a carport where someone had put some, just enough of a wall up that you could say it was a garage.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It wasn't insulated. It's probably like the bottom half of the wall was brick from where the carport originally was, and then the rest was like wood.
Yeah.
And wood that was treated, and had siding on the outside. It wasn't just straight up plywood.
Yeah.
Like it didn't look like I lived in a drug dealer's house, but it was so small that it was crowded to park like a Honda Civic in there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I needed to have those fold down shelves whenever I was going to do anything. And I also had to, going back to being ungrateful, I used to complain when I would have to back the car out and work on it in the driveway because I had to set up everything else inside the actual garage. But man, that is way better than replacing stuff in a parking lot.
Oh, yeah, so. It definitely is. And, you know, some people do have to do that. I mean, that's a thing. And again, Kurt, we talked about this off air. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should talk about it right now on air. I mean, while we're there.
Yeah, sure.
Portable garages.
Mm-hmm.
People buy portable garages.
Oh,
now, this
is
crazy. Now, I guess it wouldn't be a place you'd normally want to kind of go hang out or anything, but I think it'd be smart to mention these right now. So yeah. what did you find?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, sometimes you have a project going on. It might be a two-day job, or it might even bleed over into the next weekend. And you don't have a garage, so you would want some covering for the car.
Protect it from the elements.
Yeah. So you can kind of leave things as they are as well. You don't want to have to button everything up just to take it back apart again.
Yeah, exactly.
So I've seen some, you know, there's some real, basically, tents.
Yeah.
I don't know how well they work, though. I get the idea that they're not too stable. You'd want to check the weather before you did this type of activity.
I've looked into these.
Okay.
Because of our discussion. So I looked into these, and you know, these portable or temporary garages are a thing that people do want. Typically, they'll have like a steel frame with a fabric cover, although that covering, that's where a lot of this changes. I mean, the sturdiness of the frame and the fabric that covers it. So, you know, whether it's weatherproof, whether it's, you know, it's opaque enough that, you know, no sunlight gets through, or if all the sunlight gets through, you know, like you think about like a tent or something, you know, there's every variation, there's everything in between. So, you can find one. I mean, like they come in like barn style or, you know, whatever. They have like a little pitched roof on them so that, you know, if there is weather, rain or snow, that it would kind of like rush off the eaves, I guess, off the roof line, I should say. So it doesn't get, you know, heavy weight up there and collapse, because I think that would be a real danger with something like this.
Yeah.
Or even high winds. I mean, they're not for everybody and they're not for all situations, but you can get one that's like 12 by 20 by, I think, about 9 feet tall for, you know, a ballpark around $1,000. And that's pretty pricey still. But if you don't have an area to do what you were describing, Kurt, where you can, you know, tear something apart and leave it apart for a day or two if you have to, or exposed, or, you know, whatever you happen to be working on, you know, you want it protected, or you want it, you know, you want to protect yourself. You don't want to be out in the elements doing this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great solution. And they can stay up for, you know, extended periods of time. I mean, with some level of confidence that it's going to remain in place if you anchor them correctly and weigh them down and all that. You know, I mean, if you get to the, like the big ones, there's some big industrial size ones that are, you know, like 40 feet or more. I mean, we're talking like $12,000 for some of these.
I mean, at what point do we stop calling those things portable garages and start calling them portable barns?
Yeah.
Those really big ones.
Yeah.
Like some of those are the size of a small shop.
Well, sure. Yeah. Some of them you'll see a photo of the one that I was just talking about, the $12,000 one, and someone's driving a forklift into it to store lumber or, you know, whatever it was. It could be a temporary outbuilding for a company. You know, they're that big.
It's like a pre-manufactured garage, basically.
Yeah. But I mean, exactly right. Yeah. It's like, exactly. And it's something that's, they say it's portable. I mean, That's kind of an iffy term for something like this big, right? But I mean,
it's more portable than a garage that is attached to a house.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean? I guess it is more portable than that. Yeah. So anyways, I think it's a good solution for some people, but it doesn't work in every situation, and they are kind of expensive. But yeah, right. I feel like this is a good place to mention this anyway.
Well, for the parking lot type or the out in the street type that does their work in that environment, you know, how many times do you get involved in a project that takes you longer than you thought it was going to take?
Yeah,
you have to kind of like wrap everything up real quick and then
exactly.
You know, go back home for the night or whatever.
You know how many companies now are doing like dent repair and things like that in parking lots?
Yeah.
You know, like they'll come to your office and do that, or wheel repair or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That might be a decent use for something like that, where you want to keep, you know, like bugs and debris and stuff like that off of it. Or if it's raining that day, you can't do that work. And if it's raining, but you could set up a temporary shelter around the vehicle. If you have that, you know, that luxury of space,
I mean,
be able to do it.
Going back to your point about how portable are these things, like I think we've all seen maybe an emissions shack or something that is pretty much one of those.
Oh, yeah,
you
for
know
sure.
What I mean,
yeah, like where like it's just in a parking lot somewhere and you drive through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know there are laws and stuff, but I I treat emissions the way you like to treat landfills, Scott. I want a little bit of edge in there. I want a little bit of shade.
Seems like they usually have. Yeah, I don't have to look too hard.
No. I want to know, I don't want to know, whether that emissions place is going to be there tomorrow. I just want to cruise in, you know, ships in the night. I'm a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Just hand me the paper, put me in the system.
I think Kurt's right. It seems like most of them are that way. They operate on
like,
that.
Do they really want to even do the test? Or do they just want to want some exchange?
It's different now. It's different now in Georgia. You guys remember when you used to just get the physical badge instead of the paper and electronic entry into a system?
Sure, yeah.
Man, corruption was rife. Now, I'm not saying I ever did it, but I was in so many situations where I'd be hanging out with like a mechanic acquaintance because, you know, almost every solid mechanic has the garage they work at, and then they have their house, which also slowly over time turns into another garage.
Yeah.
And so I can't tell you how many times I had someone, like I was fixing the car of a girl I was dating or trying to get it up to the snuff for emissions. And I would have one of my mechanic buddies say, you know, we can just get a sticker. I was like, dude, I think that's pretty illegal. And they're like, well, yeah. But we can just get a sticker. And for the record, again, I never did it.
Yeah.
I never did it because I don't think that's a good move. Where was I going with this?
I'm not sure exactly.
Yeah,
Yeah. Temporary buildings that you've
seen. Buildings.
Yeah, that's right. So
shady emissions.
Yeah, shady.
That's what it is. Yeah, I mean, temporary buildings are a great idea. You guys know there's also this thing that popped up that I had never heard of before, communal garages.
Oh, Yeah. So if you don't have the space that you want for something like this, you know, or exactly the right setup, go to a community garage where you, a communal garage, I guess, where you rent the space for a certain amount of time. Now, you'll have to bring, and I think in most of those, you'll have to bring your own tools. They might have some for rent, or you can borrow some somebody that, you know, is there using the communal garage, I guess, if they're more than one bay or something. I've never used one before, but I've heard of them. I don't even know if there are any operating around here or not. I'm just not even sure. But yeah, if you don't have the space, you can rent it.
Yeah, you know? I do want to add one other thing. I've heard about this, and I've never run into someone who's actually done it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see if you guys have heard about this. Let's say you have a major repair, you know how to do it, and you have the tools, but you don't have the garage. I have heard that it's possible to go to an auto mechanic school and use their garage.
Hmm.
With the understanding meaning you're going to do the work and you're going to bring your own tools.
Is that right?
That's what I've heard. I've never seen it confirmed.
I did not know that. Oh, that's interesting. I'll have to look into that, too. I know that long time ago, there was a community college near me that had an automotive program. And I know that students would bring their cars in, and it was kind of their project, you know, for the term.
Yeah.
They'd be able to kind of work on their own car as their learning tool, I guess. You know, so they had cars that were there, you know, they had specific problems that they would teach you how to fix and repair and all that. But if you, let's say that you're taking a painting class and you've got an old car that you want to paint, there's your project. I mean, you can do it on that and learn on your own vehicle, and you'll be graded on it, of course, you know, as you would. But it's your own thing at the very end, you know, of course.
You're also more likely to treat it with care.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, it makes me think of, though, I like the fact that everything I've read about taking it to a mechanic school, everything I've read about it emphasizes you doing the work yourself. You know, you're basically renting the space.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it would be like another weird life hack I've heard of, but have never seen officially confirmed, which is saving money on a haircut by going to a cosmetology school, which feels like a real trust fall. You know what I mean?
I think that you can do that. I do think that they have that. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Have you done that, Kurt?
I have not done that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Maybe got the beard trimmed up there.
You can tell, right?
Yeah.
I mean, do you pay extra to get a week three person instead of a day one person?
I think, isn't that the thing? Like, I don't know if you pay. I think that maybe you go and maybe there's varying degrees of this, but you might pay for the supplies if you have to have your hair dyed or something like that, maybe. But I don't think that you pay. And it might take you a long time to get your hair cut because I think they're learning, you know, they're teaching somebody when you're doing it. But yeah, that's an interesting idea, though, to take it to an automotive school and rent the space. But you have to do the work yourself. So if you're knowledgeable with that kind of thing or you have the tools, that's a smart thing to do.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on, get ready for a ride. We're gonna have some fun.
We'll explore and listen to the sounds of awesome places like farms, racetracks, and even construction sites.
Follow your ears, what do you hear?
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
They'll teach us awesome new things about the places and things we see and hear.
What did we learn today?
Learning is so cool.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip Podcasts on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage. A 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We should probably buzz through a couple more of these real quick, we're a little bit behind on my list. I guess we're not going to get to everything on the list. We never do, right? Because we have all these. I love our side conversations, though. Talking about the junkyard, talking about the hair college or whatever you want to call it.
I'm the guilty party for these. I've been just derailing us the whole time.
No, that's all right. I like that stuff. But I guess overall, really, I mean, the lesson here, if there is a lesson to be learned, is get rid of the clutter, get rid of the junk, hang stuff up off the floor. You know, get it off the ground there if you can. That way you've got more real estate to use. And once you do that, then maybe flooring is another thing that a lot of people kind of neglect or overlook. I know there's been recently kind of a big push to use like those epoxy systems you can do at home. I mean, there's kits that you can buy and the materials come practically ready to go. I mean, you just have to do the cleaning yourself and, you know, there's step-by-step instructions about how to do that and it's non-skid and all that. But there's a ton of flooring options. And one of these on this list really surprised me and I was shocked by it. I'll just quickly go through the list and we can, if you wanted to stop and talk about any of them, we can. But there's, I don't have any of these, by the way. My floor is painted, which is one of the cheapest ways to do it. And it's peeled up a little bit here and there, but it's held pretty well. It's not the epoxy, but it's definitely like a harder paint. I think it's an outdoor paint that they used. And it's okay. It does the job. It keeps the fluids from going right onto the concrete, which is nice. You know, you can clean them up pretty easy. So that's one of the cheapest things you can do is paint the floor. Also, not the best option, I'll tell you that. You can do any variety of coatings, of course. You can do, you know, epoxy, or you can even do just concrete sealer if you have a nice clean floor already. You can't do that if it's already stained and, you know, kind of a mess. And that's the same thing with concrete stain. If you do concrete stain, which, by the way, looks really cool when it's done.
Sure.
But if you have a dirty floor or a cracked floor or, you know, it has imperfections, you're going to see that through the stain. Even if you try to cover it up, try to patch it or whatever, you're going to see those cracks and things, you know. So you got to have a floor that's in decent shape to begin with to do that. Okay, now there's like other surfaces that you can add to your garage floor that I know a lot of people have done. I'm a little leery of these, but...
Like what?
Like the interlocking tiles. I don't know why. I just feel like they'd be slick. You know, like they'd be like if you got any oil or grease on them, or if, but again, that's concrete as well. So I don't know, maybe there's something to that, but they look like they'd be slick even in water to me. They just don't seem, and they're a little bit pricey. I mean, you know, the interlocking tiles, they're designed for a heavy load, and you can put them on an uneven floor or semi-uneven. You have to kind of do a little bit of work ahead of time to get it ready. But it can be a simple fix. It can make your garage look really nice if you want it to look really nice. It's functional because I guess some of that stuff does drain away, you know, underneath. As long as you can access below it to clean it up eventually. You don't just have fluids laying around. And, you know, of course, one gets damaged or you want to change it out, you can do that pretty easy with tile. Instead of being one solid piece or paint or, you know, whatever, it's harder to come back from that. There's also, you know, the option you can put down, like, you know, those real heavy-duty tiles they use in a lot of elementary schools use those tiles, you know, like the vinyl, I think it's vinyl flooring. Maybe.
Oh, yeah.
But they're,
yeah.
The vinyl tiles, the one foot by one foot.
They have the, it's not corrugated. You know what I'm talking about? The surface is like a non-slip surface.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so that's a decent thing to do. I mean, you can do that. It's, again, you can get them really cheap. You can also get them very expensive, depending on the surface treatment that you want, you know, the colors and all that. And all this stuff is customizable. So if you buy, you know, a pattern that you want to put down on the ground, you can do that. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
A lot of people have, you know, there's a variety of ideas for flooring, you know, what you shouldn't do on this. But one thing that really stood out to me that, now, actually, you know, I'm going to wait for just a second. I'm going to tell you two more that I think are interesting, but then I'll get to the one that was the most interesting to me.
All right.
There's also peel and stick tiles that are kind of like what I was just talking about, but they're vinyl. Uh-huh. So it's, you know, self-adhesive type thing that, you know, you put them down. That's an okay fix, a little cheaper, but you can still do it. And then there's also a solid one-piece vinyl roll that you can put out. Like, think about linoleum, you know, like the old linoleum, only made specifically for garages. And it might have a texture to it. The problem is if you damage it or something, you know, it's harder to patch in and replace something like that. And by the way, that's one of the benefits of it is that there are no seams so that, you know, stuff won't gather in the seams, stuff won't build up. And if you start cutting holes to patch in that, you know, that's where the problems start, really. Now, the most interesting one on this list that I found for flooring options for garage, carpet. And I thought, okay, that's a little crazy, right? I mean, you think, like, this is like we're getting into that million-dollar garage territory, right? You put down carpet. It's not the case. It's stuff that's called, and I've got a brand name here for it because I saw a lot of people talking about this specific brand, and again, we're not selling it or anything like that or getting any kind of money kickback from this thing. But the brand of the product is called Tuff Carpet. It's T-U-F-F Carpet, all one word. And apparently this stuff is like peel and stick squares like you would find, you know, like in an office or something, you know, if you put down carpeting in a small room or something like that. This stuff is really, really durable. Get this, it can be like power washed if you need to.
Wow.
Yeah. And it still has the give and the feel of real carpet. It doesn't have, I don't want to put this, it's like what they use on pro football stadiums, like, you know, the turf.
Yeah.
Only it's not like, you know, AstroTurf, it's not like all, you know, prickly and pokey like that. It doesn't feel like plastic. It feels like carpet when you put your hands across it. It feels like it's got the give. It's got the plushness to it. Just a little bit, not a lot. It's not real thick shag or anything like that, of course. But it's got like a low, I guess you call it a low nap carpet. I don't know carpet really, but I think that's what they call it, low nap.
Okay.
And again, you can power wash the stuff. It's supposed to resist petroleum products. So, you know, you're thinking like, well, if my car is leaking oil, I'm not going to park it on this carpet. But apparently that's no problem. It'll just wipe right off. So I thought it was a cool solution. And they've been around for a long time. I've seen articles about this product for many, many years, since, you know, at least 8-9 years ago now at this point. So I think they're still around. The latest reference to it I found was right around 2017 or 2018, I think. So who knows? You know, maybe they're still there doing it. Maybe they're not. I don't know. But I thought carpeting was an odd thing to include in this list. But, it, you know, again, if it's built for it, why not?
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Why not?
I'm still kind of, I shouldn't be skeptical. I'm just so used to a bare floor garage. It just seems like the simpler solution.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and again, all this, I feel like you could almost make like pathways to your car. Like you could, like the area that you step out of your car onto.
Yeah.
Like that could be carpeted. Or maybe a runner on the side, you know, where, you know, you could put your shoes or whatever, you know, keep the garbage cans over there or something or whatever. But maybe not where your wheels are actually parked.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on, get ready for a ride. We're gonna have some fun.
We'll explore and listen to the sounds of awesome places like farms, racetracks, and even construction sites.
Follow your ears, what do you hear?
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
They'll teach us awesome new things about the places and things we see and hear.
What did we learn today?
Learning is so cool.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip Podcasts on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I don't know how much more I have to add. I mean, of course, there's going to be lighting options. You want to have good lighting in your garage. And a couple of things that I want to mention here, like, it doesn't have to be expensive. I'll tell you right now, in my garage, we've got like two bare bulbs in the ceiling. That's terrible. It's terrible lighting. Yeah. But I want to change that. I want to change it to, again, to be a little bit more, I don't know, just it'll look better. It will also provide better light, I guess, because the placement of them is not exactly right for me. It's just kind of where where the builder wanted to put them. You know, here's the thing. I just found something. I know this has been around a while, but have you seen these tape LEDs?
Yeah.
Those, I think, are pretty cool. And I don't know if that really would be a good option for me. I know you can dim them. You can get just, you know, the white ones. There's some that you can change all different colors. Uh-huh. And that's cool, too. But, like, these tape LEDs are such an interesting idea that, you know, they run off of, like, a low-voltage power supply. Doesn't take a whole lot to operate them, and you can put them anywhere. I mean, they're intended for, you know, well, for anything really, but, you know, under cabinet type lighting, that type of thing, you know, to replace the old fixtures that you'd have to bolt up there. But yeah, if you've never seen tape LEDs, look up, you know, look it up sometime, and might be surprised by what you find if you're not already hip to that type of thing. I'm not crazy about the quality of fluorescent lighting. And I know that's one thing, though, that you can buy a lot of fluorescent lighting cheap, relatively cheap.
Sure, yeah.
You can buy the fixtures. You can get the fixtures at, you know, like, again, Goodwill, thrift store, places like that.
Yeah.
Same place you can go to get, you know, an old cabinet. It doesn't have to be a cabinet that was built for the garage. Put an old cabinet out in the garage, you know, that was an old bookshelf or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's great storage. I mean, you could even find a way to put a door on it if there isn't one. Use an old armoire if you want. You know, put that out in the garage to store it. Like, just repurpose things and use things in a smart way that is useful to you where you need them most. So, you know, even if you have old furniture around your house that you're not using, see if you can repurpose that thing in your garage
somehow,
in some way. Yeah. It's just, it makes sense. There's a lot of really affordable, I mean, even free ways to do things to your garage to make it just a better place to be. And I think I'm getting to that point with mine. Like I said, I haven't done insulation or lighting or anything like that, but
yeah.
I'm trying to think of what else. I haven't done like floor epoxy yet or anything like that, but the paint is holding up okay. It's not fantastic, but it's all right.
The survivalist slash prepper in me wants to point out that you can, like, I know your garage pretty well from what you've described over the years. You probably have room for a deep freezer in there. I mean, consider that.
Yeah.
Maybe get one of those portable garages that Kurt hipped us to, start smoking some meats. Because you never know.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know,
sure.
You want to be prepared.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me see. What other ridiculous things can I suggest? A pinball machine? Why
well,
not?
Well, I might as well, like, you know, etch out an area on the floor and start digging the shelter.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know? Hey, that's one thing. You know what? I saw it just, I know we're getting tight on time.
No,
here,
no,
so we'll wrap it up pretty soon. But I was thinking when I was talking with Kurt, you know, like, and let's not talk about like car lifts and like, you know, elevators and things like that. We started out this podcast
sure,
saying that, right?
Yeah, all the cool
but,
stuff.
But I'll tell you, like, if you want, I mean, I'm not going to discourage anybody from doing this, but you can put in a lift in your garage. It's not as expensive as you might think. It's
right.
It's expensive, but it's not as expensive as you might think. You look at it and think it's like, well, that's $50,000. There's no way I can do that.
No, not at all.
No, the home versions of these are relative, and I'll say relatively affordable for some, you know. And
I would say comparatively.
Yeah, they're comparatively. And you've got to have the right setup. You've got to have a high enough ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has to be like 11 or 12 feet tall to safely operate one of these things, really. I mean, with the posts and everything. There's two post versions. There's four post versions. You can get a two post version, you know, where you're the posts are on the side next to the doors, I guess, when you pull up.
Yeah.
And you kind of pull through this thing. Then there's the four-post versions, which sometimes will have ramps. So you can, like, fully secure the vehicle on top of it and then raise it up. And then there's also the versions where, you know, you can block those and park another car below it, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's the
really
one
cool.
I would go for.
But, you know, those are, I mean, and you might think that, again, really, really expensive. Like, $2,500, maybe less. $2,200 is one. I saw one for $2,200 that you can get.
See, my only thing with that, and I say this as an avowed cheapskate.
Yeah.
My only thing with that is I would be very careful about how thrifty I was on buying a lift.
Yeah.
Especially because I want the kind where I'm going to have living people under it.
Yeah.
Doing repairs.
Yeah.
Or ideally the kind where I might have another very expensive vehicle under it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to wake up to that going wrong.
No, I mean? No one does. No one wants to hear that noise.
That's not the kind of alarm clock I want in the morning.
One of your cars crushing the other one of your cars.
Gosh. Yeah.
That'd be a terrible noise. And, you know, one last quick thing. So it's not out of the question to do something like that in your garage. If you've got the means to pay, you know, $2,500 for a four-post lift, do it, and you've got
right.
the place to do it.
Yeah.
One thing that I thought, okay, there's no way we can do this. It's just too expensive. I've seen do-it-yourself pits dug in garages. And I have mixed feelings about this, about
that's
safety.
That's a lot of time.
It is. But I've seen some really nice ones. Really nice
ones. Is the property on a hill or built into it or
no,
something?
Nope. This is someone chiseling right through the floor of their garage as long as they're, you know, right through the concrete.
And like putting some steps in.
Yeah, they put some steps in. And so they don't have to, like, you know, you don't have another access in another part of the building or anything like that, nothing fancy. But like the guy that I saw doing one, he had dug a hole in his garage, a very narrow garage.
Yeah.
They call it an inspection pit, but really it's for like oil changes and things like
about
that.
About how deep would you say?
It was, you know what? You'd want to be either sitting on a stool, you know, so that you're comfortable underneath it, or standing if you wanted to stand underneath there.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of like, you have to measure everything very carefully, of course.
I bet.
He had tiled his in with stone. And the stairs, so the way he gets into his is he, since it's one person operating this, he'd drive in right to a set point and then kind of like, almost like kind of worm his way underneath there onto the stairs to get underneath the car. So it didn't look very comfortable to get into because,
yeah,
you know,
if
it was longer, you could just stand upright and walk right in.
Sure.
Go under the car. But he had a smaller garage area. So, you know, even though there are stairs there, it's great to help you climb out, but you're doing that on your hands and knees probably.
I don't know, man. I felt a wave of claustrophobia just hearing that description.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, but again, the thing is, like, it's not out of the reach, and it's not something for the ultra-wealthy. It's not something that, you know, you have to have a pile of money laying around to do. You can do it. I mean, it's not, you should definitely have all this stuff inspected and checked out. You know, if you're not comfortable doing something like this, you know, please have somebody come in and install that lift for you. Of course. I mean, you want to be safe about it, but, and you might even have to. You might have to have somebody install you know, a safety inspection. I would bet the company that sells these things, you know, make sure that there's, you know, some kind of a certified individual that comes over and checks things out to make sure it's bolted down correctly and all that. Because, yeah, you don't want somebody putting something like that in their house and it'd be just like this huge liability for the company that built it, you know?
Yeah, I just don't want to be sitting under a car on a little stool in something that's slightly larger than a coffin.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. That's the way that these look, too. They look like they're very, very small. It's not like the big ones that you see at the oil change place.
Right.
You know, like, and you always will have an open hole in your garage then, of course. So that's another danger factor is, you know, somebody, you know, pulls in and they've got their, you know, they're going to make a sharp turn to get out of the garage or something, you know, to maneuver around something and a wheel goes in there. That's going to be expensive. I mean, no matter what kind of, you could put a metal grate or something over it, but again, you're starting to get more and more expensive and, you know, like, you know, it's just, it becomes more and more complex.
There's something still a little nerve-wracking about crawling under a car that's up on a jack or up on jack stands.
Yes, there is.
So yeah. I'd take the hole.
Yeah.
I'd take the hole.
Would you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
If I had my druthers, yeah, I'm with Kurt on that. I would want like a hole with an L shape at least that, you know, that goes out from either the back or the front of the car and then curves around so you have a workspace under there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can walk down the stairs like a man instead of a worm.
Instead of like shimmying down into it.
Yeah, but
first.
See, I mean, you're just opening up a larger hole in your floor.
I know.
Every time.
Look,
it's a great plan.
We're brainstorming.
Yeah, you're an idea guy. The thing is, like, it just becomes more and more complex as you think it through. And yeah, these are great to have, and it's fun. It's fun to say it and everything. Like, it'd be great to have a pit. You know, it'd be so much easier to do this oil change, you know, if I had a pit down there. But
yeah,
just think of having that pit around year round for, you know, the couple times you need it, or, you know, not being able to do certain things. I think that would be frustrating too. It's like if you had a great pit that was already dug in this bin's basement, and there's certain repairs that you can't do in the pit, you know, like you have to do them above ground just because of you know, you don't have access to it. So there'd be that frustrating side of the whole thing too. But I mean, a lift would take care of a lot of that. I mean, it would take care of, you know, that's...
Yeah, the lift's probably the way to go.
You got access above and below.
Four-post lift.
Yeah, four-post, yeah. I mean, it'd be safe, I guess, or it'd be safest. but anyways, I think that, like, again, I hope this whole show didn't, like, just come unglued when I started mentioning all this other stuff, but I really do feel like there's just a lot of really smart, affordable, or even free things that a lot of people could do to their garage that they're just not thinking of right now, or they don't have the time to put to it. If they did, though, they might find it to be a much more enjoyable place to be, and they might actually get more work done on the vehicle that they want to work on. You know, it might just be a more pleasant place to go and hang out. And I hope that message is getting through to a lot of people, you know, that, you know, just spend a little time decluttering and cleaning and thinking things through a bit if you can, you know, and have somebody that's good at organization take a look at it with you, and that helps too. You know, if you have a friend that's good at that type of thing, have them look at it. And there's a ton of information online and a lot of expensive ideas, but a lot of really clever ideas for storage and, you know, just simple garage makeover ideas. A lot of them do get into the expensive cabinets and, you know, stone countertops and that type of, you know, stuff you don't need. But look within your budget, you know, make it work. And I think you're going to be happier with it in the end, really. I mean, I really do. I think that's what I've learned through this whole process. And again, I need to get mine in much, much better condition, but I'm already seeing progress and I'm happy with it.
Oh, I would also say I think it's so cool to have a sound system in a garage. Maybe not a TV. I'm still kind of torn on the TV part.
I'm not big on the TV because I don't spend that much time out there. You know, I mean, I do go there and hang out occasionally, just, you know, sit on a milk crate in the corner, you know, and you know, listen to music and work on something that I can hold in my lap or at the desk or the bench top. Goof around with stuff out there. It's just a nice place to do that. And yeah, I'm not crazy about like just going out there and hanging out. I don't have a couch. I don't have, it's not like a den or anything like,
you know, you don't have like a cooler, a Yeti cooler
or
something?
No, I don't have anything like
or
that.
Some,
you know, some people do that kind of thing though. Like they bring, you know, they stock a, you know, refrigerator full of beer, and they've got a couch, and like a couch they picked up again at a thrift shop or something. You know, throw a rug out there, and you know, a TV on the wall, and you know, they're watching the game out there. But
it's not a workspace, though. That's transformed into something.
That's
you just don't do the work you plan to do.
That's
really a porch.
that's pretty funny. Yeah, that's a good point. And mine's not to that point, and I don't even think I want it to be at that point. I just want it to be functional, and I want it to be comfortable, and I think I'm getting there.
Well,
I'm
what's
getting
next? There
slowly.
The lighting?
Probably lighting. Yeah, I think lighting and maybe even the door insulation now that Ben's convinced me that that's the way to go.
Hey, man.
Got to beat that summer heat somehow.
Yeah, and you can you can get some pretty easy solutions. If you want, I don't want to say it's lazy, but if you feel like time is at a premium for you, you can pay someone else to do it too.
Yeah, you know, that's another thing that I found is that, you know, people are treating their garage space now like they treat closets. Like when you get a custom closet made, a lot of people have, you know, someone come in and consult them and say, here's what you need. You need these shelves. You need this many
like
clothes
racks.
Like a
cabinet maker?
Yeah.
That's
like
crazy.
They have people come out and kind of consult them and tell them what they need. And, you know, you tell them what you want out of the space and they will provide it. I mean, it's expensive again, but that's the way people are doing this now. There's garage reorganization tricks that people are using, and you know, they're also sharing them online, which is nice. So like if you have, you know, some ideas, get online and share them with other people in the community that are excited about that type of thing too. And yeah, who knows, maybe you know, some of the stuff will be something that you could see yourself doing, or maybe some of the stuff is just so outlandish that you don't want it. Like I'm not crazy about like custom, you know, the lighting and stuff like that.
Disco balls.
Yeah. I don't need anything like that. And I'm not really sold on like epoxy floor coating or anything like that yet. Paint is fine for now, you know, just an outdoor paint.
Yeah.
But something durable. But yeah, there's like different levels that everybody's comfortable with. Mm. And just find your own level, find your own budget and do it, and you'll be happy with it.
And let us know what improvements you have made to your garage. Let us know what you got hilariously wrong if you were in that situation, so that we and your fellow listeners can learn from those mistakes. You can send your garage war stories to us directly. We are carstuff@iheartradio.com. We also, you know, we'd love to see any pictures you have. If you are one of those people who got a wild hair and dug your own inspection pit, man, I want to see that.
Yeah, I would too. Before and after photos, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that'd be super cool.
Yeah, that would be.
In the meantime, let's see. I'm going to start a shady emission stand. You're moving into the Russian landfill turf. And and Kurt, I guess you're gonna be selling
secondhand portable garages.
Yeah, so we've got stuff to do between now and then. So I guess we'll have to get reports back from each one of us about what's up, right?
That's right.
All right, well, let's do it. All right, see you guys next week. Thanks for listening. Car Stuff is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage. A 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.